tail biting literally is a pig bite another pig's tail and cause injury in the victimized pigs. So tail biting is frequently seen in girth finishing pigs, but it also concurs in nursery pigs. And even as we just chat, you know, in the group housed gestating sows or gilts even.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a sporadic event. You know, some producers may see more, some may see less, but regardless, I think you probably see a tail biting during girth finishing period is pretty common.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. AB Vista, new nutritional perspectives and novel enzyme applications to drive pig production. You can combat mycotoxins in your feed with Fumezyme from DSM Firmenich. Fumezyme is the only FDA-approved enzyme to degrade fumonisins. Adiseo provides programs and services to help producers achieve their targets in a high-quality, safe, and sustainable way. Eastman works with you to accelerate your nutritional program innovation. Start your journey with us at eastman.com. Healthier pigs are good for producers, people, profits, and planet. When it comes to raising healthy, strong swine, the environment makes all the difference. Pancopia provides better environmental conditions for swine so that they can grow faster and more efficiently. Grow smarter, grow stronger, and watch your profits soar. Pancopia, the future of swine care starts here. Visit pancopia.com today to learn more.
Well, hello everyone again. Welcome to another episode of the Swine It Podcast. I'm your host today, Trey Kellner. And today I'm joined by Dr. Lee, a professor of animal science at the University of Minnesota. Good morning, Dr. Lee. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing good. How about you?
Doing good. Yeah, enjoying a beautiful Friday as we head into the fall. So, Dr. Lee, why don't you introduce yourself to our audience?
Sure. First of all, thank you for the invitation. I'm Yuzhi Li at the University of Minnesota Vice Central Research Outreach Center located in Morris, Minnesota. I've been here over the last 19 years working on swine behavior, welfare, and also organic swine production. So, I mean, we are going to talk about tail biting research today. I've been working on tail biting over the past 10 years. So I'm really very excited to share what we learned here.
Yeah, we were just chatting earlier that we could probably have a podcast series on your research and the different aspects. But specifically, we're going to talk about tail biting and the grow finish pig. So for our audience, you know, our audience has pork producers that deal with this every day to grad students that are just hearing about this for the first time, right? So, Dr. Lee, what is tail biting? How does it occur? And how often does it occur?
Okay, so tail biting literally is a pig bite another pig's tail and cause injury in the victimized pigs. So tail biting is frequently seen in girth finishing pigs, but it also concurs in nursery pigs. And even as we just chat, you know, in the group housed gestating sows or gilts even.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of a sporadic event. You know, some producers may see more, some may see less, but regardless, I think you probably see a tail biting during girth finishing period is pretty common.
Yeah, awesome. So one thing that we wanted to touch base on is, you know, one of the ways to prevent tail biting is tail docking. But that has to be done correctly, right? So talk about first in tail dock situations, how if it's not done correctly, if there's, you know, differences in tail length or, you know, we missed one or two within a group, how detrimental that can be and cause that vice to occur more.
Sure. So first of all, I think, you know, talk about tail docking and versus tail biting. Basically, producers, I mean, especially in the U.S., we dock tail of pigs at birth to prevent tail biting. So if we do not dock the tails, tail biting probably will fever high. So with the in the herd, with you know, when we dug the tails, you see probably 1 to 5% of tail pigs with tail damage caused by tail biting. If we do not dug the tail, you probably see 20 to 25% more, which means you probably see 25% or 30% of pigs with damaged tails. So you talk about properly docking the tail. I think in the U.S., we probably, you know, leave about a half inch tail, you know, at birth, so dock the rest. So I don't think, you know, the length of properly is really a problem, as long as you, you know, if you dock, if you leave too long tail, it may be not that effective. But in general, tail docking is kind of way to prevent tail biting and maybe a kind of cheapest way. But the problem is tail docking causes pain regardless how long, you know, and in pigs, and that's a welfare issue. So that's why in the European Union countries, tail docking has been banned since 2013, 10 years ago. But, you know, without tail docking, it's very hard to prevent tail biting. So that's why a lot of European countries, they cannot comply with the regulation. So I think currently, I should say, about 90%, even more than 90% pigs still docked at birth. And I think in the U.S., we probably see more than 98% pigs are docked at birth. So, you know, without tail docking, it's very hard to prevent tail biting.
Yeah, so let's talk about our European colleagues for sure that, you know, don't have that ability to dock tails. And you've spent a lot of focus of your research on, you know, trying to mitigate tail biting in those pigs that, you know, tails have not been docked. So, Dr. Lee, what have you learned from your research to help in that scenario?
Sure. So, I mean, if we cannot dock the tails, you know, I hope we can still can, but we may not, you know. If we cannot dock the tail pigs, tail biting is very hard to prevent, especially in the conventional production system in the U.S. And we did very first study to compare tail docking versus without docking. You know, we house the pigs in the same barn, similar to the commercial condition in the U.S. And we want to see whether what's the difference between, you know, docked versus undocked pigs in terms of tail biting. What we found was we saw 5% of pigs among the docked pigs had injury tails, which means 5% were tail bitten. But in the other group with pigs without tail docking, we see 30% pigs with damaged tails. So it's really reflected, you know, what people find in Europe. If we do not dock the tail, you probably see 25% more. In our case, we see 25% more pigs with tail injuries. So what do we do in terms of research to prevent tail biting without docking? It's very hard, I should say, especially in the conventional system. So the best thing, you know, European countries also found the same thing. If you could provide a bedding and with a lot of space, and that's what we found too. You know, I also do organic swine production. So just recently, we just finished a study. We house Gerfinchen pigs in the hoop barn, bedded with straw, and give them a lot of space. In our case, we gave them 25 square feet per pig, and we didn't see any tail. You know, of course, we didn't dock the tail. We sure. didn't see any pig with tail damage among the 500 pigs we used for the study until market weight. But I know, you know, bedding, straw bedding is not a practical for the conventional production system in the U.S. So what you do without, you know, if you couldn't provide bedding, I think in our case, we try to figure out why the group size is an issue, because in the US, we have a larger group size, which means we house 25, 30, even 50 pigs per pen. And if you go to Europe, they have smaller pen size. And people usually say if you, some research say if you house pigs in a smaller group size, which means 10 pigs or less in the pen versus 30 pigs in the pen, you probably see fewer pigs got tail baited, just because if you have a tail biter in a larger pen, you may, that biter can bite more pigs, right? And other pigs can learn from the biter and, you know, start biting each other. So we did a study to test that. And we didn't, you know, we have 9 pigs in the pen versus 18 pigs in another pen. And we didn't really see small pens has benefit. We did see pigs in small pens have fewer pigs got tail injured, but their injury were more severe compared to larger pen. So the severe damage of the tail can cause a lot of issues. You know, first of all, animal welfare issues, health issues, and pigs with severe tail injury may not go to the feeder to eat, and then they probably will have reduced growth rate. And also that can cause, you know, the medical expenses, the labor and the space increase associated with the taking care of those injured pigs. And finally, I think at the processing plant, those pigs may get a carcass trim due to the tail infection. So the group size, at least our study didn't find effect, you know, that's not effect strategy. Another thing we look at was litter origin. The idea was whether, you know, if we house litter mates in the same pen versus non-litter mates, because right now we never think about that. We mix pigs, a group of pigs, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe the litter mates, that's kind of social support. You know, they may get along better. So we compared that as well. And right now we are still analyzing the data. Actually, this is our second study looking at litter origin. But so far we didn't see clear, you know, a conclusion, litter mates is important or not. And I think at the individual level, I think what we saw in our research, also as you probably hear the producers say the same thing, at the individual level, usually the smaller pig can be the biter, simply because tail biting probably is a strategy for smaller pigs to get access to feed or a rest area where it's occupied by bigger pigs. So that's why, you know, when you look at the tail biters, try to find tail biter, you probably should check those smaller pigs and probably should check the feeder area. So people always say female sex play a role in tail biting. Gills probably usually the biters versus the barrels are usually weaponized pigs, which means barrels are beaten. We didn't see this clearly. In one study, we saw a tendency, but in the current study, we didn't see that. So that may or may not be true. So I think that's what we kind of find right now. But right now we are doing another study. We use computer vision to track individual pigs 24/7. And we want to identify, you know, first of all, we want to identify who is the tail biters. And then we want to know what behavior changes those tail biters, you know, may have. And then from there, we want to find any indicators whether we can identify them early, things like that.
Yeah, that is awesome. As a pork producer myself, I've always thought when we talk about camera technology within our barns and where's areas where it can gain value, you know, something like advice like tail biting makes all the sense in the world, right? Where we can identify the tail biter and remove that pig and isolate that pig doesn't do any further damage. And then B, then also early treatment, you know, on the pigs that were tail bitten, right? So
really identify tail biting is in the pen is very important. So there are two things, you know, you may look at it, as you said, identify the tail biters. And another thing is to identify, other people call it as well, indicator pigs. Oh, indicator sure. pigs means the first pig in the pen which had a fresh blood on the tail. So if you see that, that means tail bite, there's a tail biter in the pen. So that means tail biting may start. So you have to, that's a time to find, to identify the tail biters. So maybe also check other factors related to tail biting. I mean, we should talk about, you know, tail biting risk factors, what, you know, can cause tail biting. I think farmers, producers know.
Yeah. I think we have our laundry list for sure. But Dr. Lee, for those listening to this podcast that may not be familiar, what would be some of like your top five risk factors in terms of, you know, hey, this might be a tail biting situation. Let's be more aware here.
Sure. I think, you know, not on our study, also the experience in Europe, they will say the risk factors, because tail bitings are multi-factory event. So the risk factors can start from even genetics. The modern genetics with a fast lean growth can likely develop tail biting. And the herd health, you know, if the herd health is compromised, you'll probably see more tail biting. Experience in Europe say pigs with respiratory disease may develop tail biting. And a study conducted at University of Minnesota years ago, not by us, but by our senior professors, also show that a herd positive to PRRS had higher tail biting incidents. They find 16% pigs got tail damage versus 5% in the healthy herd. So herd health is also, you know, important. You should, you know, take care of that. And I think European producers will say herd health is the most important thing to prevent tail biting. So and another thing, I think European farmers also say management and barn environment, they call it barn climate. So make sure the temperature, thermal environment, air quality, overcrowding, the feeding, you know, not especially not overcrowding at feeders or not, do not prevent feed outage, you know, that kind of thing. So just do the regular, you know, the right thing. I think that's maybe, you know, genetics, herd health, and environment and management. I think I would say, besides those things, I think we talk about early identification, you know, identify the event early and either remove the tail biter if we could. And if you find a tail biting started, properly stopping it is also important. And by stopping it, I think identify tail biter is the major thing, the key thing. Early stage, it may be possible. And we talk about small pigs, the feeding area, whatever. And also, I mean, European experience is providing some enrichment. I'm not sure, you know, what kind of enrichment we could use. There's some kind of enrichment in the US, but the effectiveness of it is the enrichment need to be further confirmed or tested even. So finally, maybe removing the victimized pigs. I think that's the last thing to do when the welfare of the victimized pigs is compromised, then you should. And our study showed that 20% of pigs, victimized pigs, if they were only victimized once by tail biting, they probably can get recovered without any intervention. So you don't have to remove the pigs right away. But I think once you see tailbone started, you definitely should check all the risk factors, like feeders are working properly, is the thermal environment working properly. So all the things we do daily. So those, I should say, probably the risk factors we should pay attention to.
Yeah, I 100% agree with our experience as well, Dr. Lee. So you talked a little bit about enrichment, right? So I want to talk about strategies once maybe tail biting has occurred, right? So once we do have a couple tail biters, et cetera, I'm sure you've heard from producers about a million different things that have been tried, right? So you're talking about enrichment, such as like, you know, bowling balls or salt blocks in the pen or logs, straw, feeding, you know, higher levels of lysine or salt or magox, et cetera. So Dr. Lee, in everything that you've seen and everything that you've researched, if there's pork producers or growers or caretakers or listening to this podcast saying, hey, what are some things that you think make the most sense to try within the barn? What advice would you give them?
That's a very tough question. We're still figuring out. First of all, I should say, you know, pay attention, you know, do the rising in the barn and pay attention, you know, the herd health, you know, pay attention to pigs and, you know, try to find any pigs that are not doing right. And, you know, they talk about the herd health, lameness. You know, we see lame pigs in the barn. So once lame pigs in the barn, they probably can get tail beaten. So all the right things, because tail biting is really, you know, sometimes you feel like you did everything correct, but tail biting happened. Sometimes you feel like you didn't care too much, but there's no tail biting. So I'll say, you know, if you see a lot of tail biting in your herd, I think the herd health should be checked, and also maybe genetics. See whether your genetics is kind of vulnerable to tail biting. So really, there's no silver bullet here. So I should say, just do the right thing. So in terms of, you know, strategy, farmers or producers usually think, you know, herd health management and barn environment more important. This is the European experience, because they are forced to, you know, give up tail docking. And they got, that's their experience. They feel those three things are more important. But researchers like me, I think I'm not totally agree with the researchers in the Europe, but researchers emphasize enrichment. And they said, you know, you regardless, you should provide some enrichment. But the problem for us is we still haven't identified the most effective enrichment, which can be used anywhere, let's say in the US. So I would say, because the European producers' experience was up to 90% of tail biting can be avoided just by, you know, managing the herd health, the environment and management. And the research show, on the other side, the enrichment can avoid up to 50% of tail biting. So if you think about, you know, 90% versus 50%, looks like the management probably is more effective and maybe even cost effective. So, but on the other hand, I think enrichment probably will be the area we need to work on to identify the most, you know, practical, cost effective, and, you know, can be applied in the US especially.
Yeah. And Dr. Lee, it may even be a situation where a rotation of those enrichment strategies or, you know, strategies that might be employed might be best. As we all know, as humans, sometimes we get bored, right, with enrichment that goes on. And pigs are kind of similar in the same fashion, right? So
Exactly. Yeah, they were talking about multi-points, multiple, and you have to change, you know, just keep pigs engaged or curious about in those enrichment. But on the other hand, if you think about large-scale, you know, swine production, it has to be practical. You know, you have to think how to, you know, manage and how much time you need to, you know, spend on those things.
And well, first of all, you know, thanks for your work on this. You know, as a pork producer and as a nutritionist, right? We work on this every day, and it's something that is, you know, on the top of our minds in terms of first animal welfare, second then sustainability, right? We're putting a lot of costs and feed into a pig that may not make it to market, and then third, we're trying to get, you know, more pigs to market to, you know, to increase profitability of each group, right? So efforts on this are extremely valuable, and thank you for your work in this area. I appreciate it. So with that, Dr. Lee, do you have any take home messages or a quick summary of our discussion for us before we get into some questions so we can get to know you better?
Sure. I think, you know, animal welfare, just as you said, you know, nutrition, welfare, sustainability, that's probably, you know, is important to producers and also for producers to get the social license. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what's happening in Europe usually eventually will come here. I hope it will not, but I think it will. And so that's why we want to prepare our producers for the future potential regulation, and tail docking definitely is on the list. So I think my take home message for producers for this session, when we talk about tail biting without tail docking, first of all, you know, just we need to do the right thing as we do every day, but we need to do harder properly, you know, just as I said, her health and management environment, and even probably looking at the genetics. I think that's something down the road we may look at, you know, because the lean growth is not everything. So we have to think about other things. And the second thing, if you know, there's tail biting, you know, I think without tail docking, tail biting probably is not preventable at all. We just try to minimize. Mm-hmm. So address all the risk factors. You know, we said early identification, which means we need more observation, you know, closely observation, really identify and try to stop as soon as possible. So those are my take home message. And I think from a research perspective, we really want to, you know, see the heritability of tail biting, you know, the genetic, working with genetic company. That's something I'm interested in and will be working on it. And also we probably should identify what's the best enrichment for pigs, especially for, you know, the enrichment we can use in the US in our conventional systems.
Awesome. Thank you for that.
It's time for our famous three. We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. Fortiva, creating ingredients for impact to support animal resilience and health. Learn more at fortivaimpact.com. SUNY, we provide value-added biotech solutions. Essential Ag Solutions, bringing innovative science-based solutions to livestock producers. Keys Manufacturing is America's number one source for cheese meal and dairy powders for your feed. Check us out at keysmanufacturing.com. Eastman serves veterinarians and nutritionists in agrochemical and animal health industries by helping them select, evaluate, and implement innovative nutritional programs. Eastman works with your team to customize your gut health approach in feed and water. Eastman's approach addresses nutritional and bacterial challenges and finds new ingredient preservation and hygiene solutions. Explore ways to accelerate and innovate your programs. Contact the animal nutrition team at eastman.com.
All right. So kind of four final questions to end on this note. I always think it's great for our listeners to get to know our guests a little bit better. So Dr. Lee, what's your favorite part about fall in Minnesota?
Right. I enjoy the color in Minnesota. The fall color is really beautiful, especially, you know, we have 10,000 lakes in Minnesota, and especially you go to the lake area and see the color by the lake. Oh, that's beautiful. I think everyone should come to Minnesota at least once in your lifetime during the fall season. That's the best, the most beautiful season in Minnesota. Yeah. So I go out and just go to the lake area, see the colors.
Yes. I grew up in Western Kansas where there's a tree about maybe every hour and a half, about every, 100 miles. So yeah, Minnesota in the fall is gorgeous.
Exactly.
Second question, what's the biggest hurdle that you overcame in your career that you're the most proud of?
I grew up in the big city. I was born and grown up in the big city back in China. And didn't know agriculture or animal science or farming at all before I entered agricultural college, study animal science. So I think the biggest hurdle is I learned a lot from working on the farm with producers especially, and I'm proud of that because that helped me to shape my research focus. So whenever I do research, I think about how farmers will use it or look at it. So I think that's the biggest thing.
Yeah, that's awesome. If you had 1 minute to talk to a new faculty member, what advice would you give him or her?
Sure. I think the first thing is to understand the industry. You know, in animal science, you need to, gain some experience by working with producers if you could. And observer, be a good observer and listener. Listen to producers and maybe your peers, and make judgment based on fact rather than others' opinions, and get feedback from others when your opinion or whatever you like, communicate your opinion with others and get their feedback, and don't feel bad whenever others' opinions are different from you. I think you probably learn a lot when others are different. Your opinions are different from you. So,
yeah, thanks for sharing. Those are great words of wisdom, not only if you're a new faculty member, but just in general, if you're starting a new job or you're starting your new career, whatever it may be, or if you're an old dog trying to learn new tricks, right? I think that's great advice. All right, last question, Dr. Lee, in this podcast. And do you have a favorite fall recipe that may include pork that you like to prepare or anything like that?
I eat a lot of pork, I think, every week, every day, maybe. So pork ribs, that's my favorite.
Oh, yeah.
And all my friends like it. So basically, I use the instant pot, just put the ribs in and put some spice, Chinese spice, and put some soy sauce and cooking wine, salt, and garlic, and the ginger, green onion. And then that's it.
Oh, that sounds amazing.
Yeah. You should try it.
Yes, I will do that here when I go home for lunch. How long do you cook it for?
I think, the instant cook will tell you, I think it's 15 minutes per pot.
Nice. Yeah.
Yeah. So depending.
That's for sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. Cool. Well, Dr. Lee, thanks for a great conversation and sharing your information with us. Really appreciate it. I know I learned a lot, and I'm sure our listeners did too. So with that, thanks for joining us for another episode of the SwineNet Podcast. We come out with new episodes every Tuesday on your favorite podcast services and on YouTube. Hope you have a great rest of your day.
Thank you. Thank you for the invitation. Enjoy your day too. Thank you. Bye.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.